to Point Breakaway, the podcast about the Kings, Ducks, anything else that comes to mind. I am Josh Cooper in Los Angeles, California. He is Shane O'Brien, back from Arizona in Orange County because they opened up the golf courses. Is that correct, Shane?
That definitely had something to do with it, Coop. It was getting a little hot out there in the desert for me too. My Irish skin couldn't take it, although I do have a nice tan going right now. It was a great 2 weeks. I actually spent some time with our guest Brad Richardson out there for a couple days and saw him, which was great. It was good to get away. But yeah, the golf courses are back open. Unfortunately, Coop, I have to carry my own bag and walk, which is, I know it doesn't sound like a whole lot to maybe you people out there, but when you're used to riding a golf cart, listening to tunes and having a few cocktails, it's a little different element for you.
You will do anything to play golf, even carry your own golf bag.
Well, I mean, I've been complaining since it opened last week about how we should have golf carts because I was out in Scottsdale and, you know, I felt safe. Everyone had their own golf cart. You were 6 feet apart. They wiped it down before you got in. They wiped it down when you got out. You couldn't touch the flag sticks. So social distance was being applied. So I feel like we should have a golf cart, and I'm going to continue to complain at Big Canyon until they fire those carts up for the boys.
You'd appreciate this, Obes. My 2.5-year-old kid, we got like a little fake golf set for him. I'll put it this way. He's not playing golf. He's taking big-ass Happy Gilmore swings at that ball. I look at him like, oh, shit, he is playing hockey right now. He is not playing golf. So
chicks dig the long ball, Coop. Chicks dig the long ball, so that's good for him, you know. He's off to a good start.
2.5. He's got some time to worry about that. But yeah, he's playing hockey. He's not playing golf with that golf set. So anyway, we've talked a lot about golf on this podcast, but this is a hockey podcast, and we have really enjoyed our hockey talk with our guests, and this guest is an awesome one, a Stanley Cup champion, 2012, Los Angeles Kings, a great friend of Obie's, current member of the Arizona Coyotes, Brad Richardson. Brad, thank you so much for coming on Point Breakaway. We truly appreciate it, and how you doing?
I am great, boys. Thanks for having me.
from Bell Vegas, Ontario. From Bell Vegas.
Exactly. Don't leave that out. Don't leave that out there.
Oh, Richie.
Yeah, so all good, boys. Just got back from the rink, a little lift. Maybe going to sit by the pool a little bit and get a nice little tan going.
Yeah, Rich, obviously, thanks for joining me, buddy. It was great seeing you the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it brought me to your first question here for me to you. And we touched base on it last week, but so you're going to the rink and you're rehabbing your groins right now. So you're going in every day, getting a little workout in, and that's got to help you deal with, you know, being away from the game. At least you can go in and get a little taste of it.
But yeah, it's, I mean, as soon as I was battling an injury all year, and as soon as I knew I was going to have surgery at the end of the year, no matter what. And as soon as I knew we were done, I'm like, let's get this done in case we do fire back up. So had that done in Philly, and then I've been cruising. It's been 6 weeks now, so it's flown by, and I'm almost back to, you know, full health. And It's been good because I'll be back healthy, but it's been nice actually to go in and get out of the house and go work out every day and get some treatment. And I mean, you know, I had a massage guy to come over and all that stuff. So I'm getting the full NHL treatment still. So it's been nice.
A little massage to the house. Hey, that's a nice touch. I'm not going to lie.
You know how that is, eh, old?
I do know how that is. I got the old hockey DB pulled up here, and I got to be honest, solid pick, Richie. You got the nice beard going with the nice hair. You look good. Little Andy Roddick look going on, if I got to be honest.
Thanks, buddy.
And obviously with your 800 games, buddy, I'm so proud of you. But there's one little three-game stint here in 06-07 for the Albany River Rats. Was that just a little conditioning stint, or was that a three and three in and out of Albany? What happened there? But I never know that even happened.
Yeah, you know what? I cut my ankle like in practice. I got stepped on in practice and cut my ankle really bad, and it just kept like reopening. So I was out like probably almost 2 months with this cut on my ankle, because every time I put my skate on and try to flex, it would pop back open. So eventually it healed. And then they're like, you haven't played in 2 months. Like, let's go down to Albany, get 3 games in and come back. So it was just, you know, one of those like conditioning stints or whatever. Cause I hadn't really skated in like, you know, over a month. So it was one of those things, you get down with the rats a little bit.
The old River Rats, man.
Yeah, that's quite the bar, eh, boy? Oh. I'll tell you, you get out of there in a hurry.
Hey, you remember Mike Scroy, Richie? You remember that tough guy, Mike Scroy?
Isn't that the guy that fought in the UFC? Or he went north?
Yeah, that's the guy who went crazy. He had a hat trick against me when I was in Portland for the Albany River Rats. In Albany, he had a hat trick.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so that rink, when I think of that, I think of Mike Scroy. He was actually a good guy. He was a tough guy. But let's just say not the most skilled guy. He had a hat trick against us that night. So when I saw Albany, I had to bring it up and ask you the question.
Yeah, that's what happened, yeah. Oh, buddy.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to say, Rich, obviously, you know, looking at your DB, and I've known you for a long time, and, you know, playing in Colorado, and, you know, I remember you had to go back down the American League after you knew you were an NHLer, and I knew that was hard for you. And so let's fast forward to when you got traded to L.A. Did you know anyone when you got traded to the Kings? Did you know what you're going into? Obviously, L.A. is a beautiful place, blah, blah, blah. But did you know any of the guys before you got to L.A.? Because I know once you got there how everything went down, but did you know any of the boys before the trade went down?
You know, it was like that weirdest thing in that whole year. Like I got hurt literally, it was like 2 days, like one of the last skates of the summer in Colorado, and broke, like tore the tendon in my wrist. Literally 2 days before camp started, I kind of tried to do like a little sack at Guantimer and somehow my wrist like popped. And that was my season in a nutshell that year. Like all of a sudden I missed the first little bit of the year and I couldn't play catch up. And then I got, you know, they kind of buried me in the minors. It was weird. But then it was a weird feeling that summer. I'm like, I asked for a trade. I've never been traded in junior any league. So I was kind of like nervous about it, but I asked for a trade. And then, you know, you're kind of in the back of your mind, you know how we are, because we're watching Entourage and all that shit. And, you know, somehow like I had LA in the back of my mind, and it kind of came into fruition. It was one of those, you know, the secret moments. You think about it long enough, maybe it happens. But I got there and I didn't know a single person, but I got there and it was the same year. You know, Jarrett Sloan got traded and Matt Green got traded from Edmonton. And so it was kind of a new turnover of players. Doughty was drafted that year and came in, and it was just kind of a lot of young guys came together and we all kind of gelled really quickly.
So I there's Josh Cooper over here. And again, thanks so much for coming on the pod with us. I got to ask, because I'm really fascinated by this individual. You get traded to LA by Dean Lombardi. What was it like when you first met Dean Lombardi?
No, you know, it was great. Dean's an interesting guy. You know, he like, I don't remember the exact first time I met him, but I, you know, throughout the years, he's one of those guys, he'd call you up periodically. He'd just like randomly pick a guy kind of every couple of days and call you up to his office and just chat with you about life in general and what's going on with you. And, you know, he'd just sit there and pick your brain for, you know, 20 minutes or so. And very different approach than most GMs have, but definitely helped me push along and help me establish my career. And a guy that I've seen, you know, in the last few years, and he's always comes up and gives you a big hug, and you know, you have that bond because you won together. So it's he's a great guy, and he's been in the game for a long time.
One thing I find super fascinating about him was he was so big on just creating the right type of culture in that team. And you mentioned you entered the King, or you came to the Kings same time as Matt Green and Jarrett Stoll. What was it like just watching those two guys come in, maybe command the room right away? At least that's how I imagine it. I don't know if that's how it really worked out, but just watching those guys, their presence come in and being there really like right when the rebuild sort of took off, because that's when I think that trade was when it really started to happen.
Yeah, you could see, like, I mean, obviously I know a couple guys a little bit before that, and the culture was kind of, it was kind of a tough culture. A lot of losing went on, you know, the years before that. And those guys came in and, you know, it just kind of seemed to turn over. Doughty, who just got picked, and we could tell he was going to be a special player. And Wayne Simmons came in. And it was just funny. Greener got in there that summer. He literally got traded and moved there. Stoley was already living in Hermosa Beach at the time. So that was kind of a great trade for, you know, both those guys. So Greener grabs a beach place right on the sand right away, the dumpiest place, but a great little party spot. So we literally would play volleyball and drink beers there, you know, pretty much, you know, every day we'd go after practice, play volleyball or whatever. And we just became real close very quickly. And, you know, me and, you know, I have a place in Hermosa. I live literally across the street from Greener. Stoley lives literally 30 seconds away. And there's so many guys, you know, Trevor Lewis and all these guys and Doughty, we're all within, you know, 2 minute walk of each other. So it's crazy how far we've came as friends, and now we're all living literally within, you know, a mile of each other. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, Richie, for sure, man. And that was one of the things, you know, obviously we go back in the day, and I would hang out with you and Stoley and the boys in the summer and the good old six-man volleyball tournaments. And, you know, I know Stoley means a lot to you, but when you first got traded there and you started living with them, and I'm a huge Jarrett Stoll fan, you know that. We've had him on the pod, and he's working with the Kings and doing Fox now. You know, how important was it to you, not only just to live with Stoley, but going to the rink with him every day, practicing with him? Like, how big of an influence did he have on you, not on the ice, but off the ice as well?
He was huge. I mean, he was one of those guys, like, he loves to have a great time. You know, he's a great guy to be around. He cares about people. But when he's at the rink, he's pretty serious. And he's dialed in. He knows, he knew his role, and he excelled at it, you know. So he was one of those guys. Like, Dustin Brown was a great captain when I was there. But, you know, kind of Stoley kind of ran the room. Him and Greener kind of took, you know, had that, you know, weren't cap. Well, Greener was assistant captain, but Stoley wasn't. But he kind of, you know, brought everyone together. And I kind of said he was a so-called captain in a different way. was just a great guy to learn from. Always on time, always early, always put the extra work in. So at that point, I still was, you know, a little green, and even though I had kind of been around for a couple of years, I still messed around a little bit too much in certain ways. And you know, even when I got
that, nothing about that, nothing about that.
Nothing about that, but you know, he kind of showed you, like, those guys, some of those guys showed you the kind of work you got to put in. And even though I always worked hard, but not, you know, got to be dialed in at the right times. And I definitely learned a lot from him, and we're still real close to today, so it's great.
So what was it like living with Jared Stoll? This just seems like just a fascinating experience.
How much time you got, eh? How much time we got?
You know what? Like I said, he likes to have fun off the ice. And you know, us living together in LA, kind of both kind of being single at times and having girlfriends at times, it was just a weird thing. We traveled together everywhere on all-star breaks, and we hit, I don't think we hit every party you could ever hit in all-star breaks. We went to Mardi Gras one year, we hit Vegas, we were Cabo, you know, we pretty much did it all. The one funny story is we're supposed to head to Cabo, and we both had girlfriends at the time, and we literally broke up with him the same day and went to Cabo solo with So it was just one of those, like, he calls me, he's like, I just broke up with so-and-so. I said, so did I. Let's go. So
let's go, boys.
We had a great time, but he was great. And then the one year we had an absolute hilarious house. It was me, him, and Teddy Purcell.
Oh, God.
I mean, if you know anything about Ted, he likes to rock and roll too. So we had the three of us. It was just, and those walls were paper thin, if you know what I mean. So it was a fun time, and we just played hockey and had fun, and you know, there wasn't really much, you know, care in the world. So that was a great year. And then Teddy ended up getting traded, I think, in February, but we had, you know, 6 or 7 month run together. And like I said, Teddy's living down there now too, and there's just so many guys have been drawn to that area and those, in that group of guys, just because it was, you know, everyone just had so much fun together. And those were some good years, that's for sure.
You know what, Rich? Like, that was the thing I loved about your guys' team in LA. And the year we played, I was in Vancouver, and we played you guys in the first round, and it was a great series. We ended up beating you, I think, in six or whatever. But after that series, we were in the dressing room in Vancouver on the plane after, and we're like, man, that team's coming. Like, you could just tell that you guys were heading in the right direction. You all were playing for each other. And you know what it's like in the NHL, Rich. There's so many egos and guys making so much money that, yeah, you're pros at the rink, but not everybody has a team like that where you guys truly care about each other. And I love how you guys, you know, you went hard off the ice, but on the ice you played hard, you competed, you were there for each other. So, you know, I was lucky enough to hang around with you guys a little bit, but man, it was fun watching you guys do what you do, even though I was competing against you at the same time.
Yeah, and it definitely felt that way from the first year. We kind of knew we weren't going to be great. The first year I got there, I was whatever it was, so 7 or 8 or whatever. But the first year when those guys came in, Dowdy got drafted, we knew it would probably take a year or two. The next year we made the playoffs. I think that was the year we lost two guys. And it was a taste, but you guys are a way better team. But we got a taste of it. And I think that after that, we kind of had a feeling that we were just going to get better and better. And guys really did. And then, you know, obviously when we went on to win, we had, you know, Daryl come in. And we were struggling that whole season, and Daryl came in and just kind of threw the hammer down on us, and it was crazy. But he, like, literally, when you're down and out, when you think like he's gonna give you shit, he'd pat you on the back. When you're getting a little too cocky, you won 4 or 5 in a row, he literally would come down on you, and you know, he'd be yelling and screaming like he just lost 12 in a row. So it was a different mindset. You know, he always was there to kind of pump you up when you needed it, and he was there to, you know, kick you in the butt when he didn't, not literally, but you know what I mean, he was there, yeah, just to kind of bring you down back to earth when we thought we were getting too good. So it was a great, yeah, great time.
And by the way, another one of my favorite things besides, you know, seeing my boy like yourself go on to win a Stanley Cup was his press conferences after games in the playoffs. I mean, when he would come on the podium and talk after games, like me and Loops and the boys, we'd be like, we can't miss this, because he just called it how it was. Like, he was just a farm boy from Alberta, and he wasn't going to sugarcoat it. And he told you how it was, but you could tell that he had a good sense of humor to him for sure.
Yeah, and in a weird way, he kept things loose. And he's the most sarcastic person you ever meet. I think you saw that in his press conferences. Like, but he, like, the antics he'd pull in the room, the first time he came in the room, we're like, you know, we went from Terry Murray, he was, like, so cerebral, didn't say a word barely, and then you got – you know, Daryl comes in the first game. He comes in the dressing room just before we're about to head out for the game. He gets on his, like, hands and knees, like he's getting ready for a game, like he's leaning on a stick, and he starts spitting all over the floor. Like, he's like, all right, boys, there we go. He kind of talking under his breath, like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And he's spitting on the floor like he's, you know, he's a player or whatever. Like, and he's like getting in the fight with us, you know, and everyone's kind of looking around, like almost laughing, but you're like, what's this guy doing? But there were so many like stories like that. Like, I mean, him pulling out all the like the radio cords in the dressing room that are laying there for like the interviews because he thought we were so Hollywood, so he decided to pull all the cords out of the walls. Like, it was just like funny stuff like that, you know. Like he kept you on your toes even when you thought you were real good, and he wasn't shy to say, you know, if our good or real good players like Kopi and those guys weren't having a great night, wouldn't be shy to say something to him and set him down for a shift, and you know, vice versa. But you know, he just loved the guys that worked hard, and everyone had it was kind of on the same playing field. I think he had a big heart for guys that just worked hard, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you could tell that for sure. And let's move to the cup run here, Rich. And I was looking it up, and obviously I was following it a lot that year. And you know, you guys were the eight seed coming in and just got in the dance. But the thing that jumped out to me, man, was your road record, 10-1 on the road that year in the playoffs. I mean, to me, that shows a good hockey club. Like, anytime you can be a good road team, to go 10-1 in the playoffs, just walk me through that. Just your mentality going on the road. Was it just because all the boys were together, you know, the wives and family were back in LA and you could just focus on hockey, or did you just love playing on the road and just getting greasy?
Well, I think it was one of those things, like, we knew we had a really good team when we got in the playoffs, and we knew Vancouver, we were like, couldn't wait to play them, to be honest. It was like that. We had them, you know, the year when we played you guys, and we just had a feeling we were going to beat them. They just lost, I think it was the year before, in the finals, and we just felt like they're a team that we could just pound on, and they're fragile a little bit. So, I mean, I think going in, like, sometimes being the underdog is a good thing. You go in their barn, and we were kind of thinking, we get in there, we steal one, we flip the series, you know, we flip home ice. But we got on such a roll at the end, towards the end of the season, that we felt so good about our team that we couldn't almost be beaten. I think it was some kind of thing that year, like, we hadn't given up a lead in the third, and like, I don't know how many games it was. We won all these one goal games. We were just very comfortable playing defensively. And I think, you know, everyone turned up their game a bit, but I think we had such a confidence that we just knew we weren't going to be beat. Didn't matter who we were playing. And I mean, I think we were up 3-0 in every series in that playoff. So it was kind of like, we just put the hammer down and away we went, but we had some unbelievable efforts from guys too, you know?
So first off, I love your Daryl Sutter stories. I could listen to Daryl Sutter stories for days. I mean, and as a media member, I loved asking him questions, because I don't know if it was like this as a player, but for me, it was like, you'd ask him a question, he'd give you a look, and you're like, what the fuck's he about to say? Like, you just didn't know, but he kept you on your toes. But, you know, you mentioned sort of being really good on the road, the Vancouver series. There were just two big hits in that series that really set the tone. The Mike Richards hit and the Dustin Brown hit. When you're a player and you're seeing that, and you're seeing those two guys just putting on their big boy pants, like, what does that mean for the rest of the guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember that. I remember Brownie's hit. I don't remember Richards' hit here. I have to see it. I probably have to see it to remember that one. I can't remember that for some reason, but I remember... I think Brown's hit was like the turning point of the series. And that was just like, at that point when he hit, I can't remember if it was Hank or Danny, but he hit them, whoever it was. And literally it felt like they were done at that point. Just like that hit took the wind out of their sails. And that, I think it was maybe game three, but I felt like that was the series was over at that point.
I'm pretty sure the Richards hit was on Burroughs. He just kind of just almost came out of nowhere and just annihilated him in the third period. I want to say, I don't remember which game it was, but does that ring a bell at all?
It doesn't. I have to see it, but I just remember the Brown one, because it was like, it was classic Brownie hit.
Hey, nothing wrong with taking a run at Burroughs. Eh? Really, nothing wrong with that. I love the guy.
There's a lot of guys in that squad you want to take a run at. So.
Well, the thing too I find interesting about your career is that, like, you go on this run with LA, and then you end up playing for teams that you guys beat. Like, what's it like going into those rooms after we still have all these guys, Vancouver, Arizona?
I guess we beat both those. But yeah, the Vancouver one was weird because I had such a hatred for Vancouver playing, you know, against them in the playoffs. And, you know, some of their guys, I just didn't like the way they played. It was like they were always flopping and throwing their head back every time they got touched. And, you know, I liked a lot of the whole league felt like that. So it was one of those hated teams. And, it was one of those things, I was a free agent and they like flew me in or whatever, talked to me, and you go meet with all the the staff and stuff. And I literally said to them, like, I hate your whole team, because they're asking me about, like, and I literally said that to like Mike Gillis, and he's like, what? I'm like, you just have the rattiest team and I can't stand you guys. And then I ended up signing 2 years there, but it's just like one of those things I couldn't stand it. But when I got there, I loved it. You know, Obes played there. It's one of the best places to live and play. It's amazing. But I just, those guys, for some reason, there's a few of those guys that irk me, and they tend up being great guys, obviously, like guys like Kessler and Burroughs and, Yannick Hentz and all these guys. But it, you know, when you're playing against, when you're playing against guys in playoffs, you know, you develop that rivalry and you just have a hatred, you know.
When I played in Van for my 2 years, Rich, those guys, they just, as you know, you played there, they fueled off it. I'm gonna get back to Van. I just got one more thing about your cup run. I mean, everyone knows how big of a beauty team you had, and then you win the Stanley Cup, and you know, most teams got to give it back at the start of September, but no, not the LA Kings that year because there's a lockout. So you guys got a little more time. You got a little more time to really enjoy the mug there, didn't you? When the lockout hit, I remember you and Stoli Babe were still getting your hands on that mug a few extra times than most teams did.
Buddy, by the end of the, when that season started back up, I was sick of looking at that thing. I thought,
take this thing away from me. I've had too much fun with it.
Well, we got it so much after we won, and then you had all your parties. I went to a few of the other guys, and then the season doesn't start. We're like, Jesus, okay. So then the guy would call us. The guy, can you guys want it for a couple of days here and there? We're like, yeah, for sure. So we'd have another little party, and it happened again. And you know, a couple of weeks later, I'm back in LA. I'm like, oh man, it's just taking a toll on us. So we had a pretty good run. It was nice to take that extra time to enjoy it, and I'll tell you what, we surely did.
I know you did. It was legendary. Your whole team there was legendary. And then, Rich, you know, you said you moved on to Vancouver, like Coop brought up. And, you know, I remember you leaving, you know, L.A. and, you know, me and you talking about Vancouver. And we don't need to get into that. But just when you got to Van, you played for one of my old coaches, John Tortorella. You know, I had Torts in Tampa for 2 years. And we've talked about Torts before, me and you. And, you know, he is what he is. He's a hard-nosed guy. But you enjoyed playing for me, did you not?
I actually loved him. Yeah, he was great. All you had to do is just work your ass off, and you know, he'd respect you. Even if things didn't go right, at least if you're working hard, doing the right things, and trying to play the right way, he'd respect you, and he'd kind of leave you alone. So I think he yelled at me one time, like maybe at the start of my first year there, and I don't think I ever said a word the rest of the year to me. So, you know, that's really it. I mean, there were some antics, obviously, that go on with him. It's, his training camps are absolutely insane. You know, it's crazy what he puts you through, but he just wants to see who can work, who can just battle through it, and he doesn't care what your times are, really. He just wants you to see you battle and work hard and see who's got the character and who doesn't. So I think, you know, the way he does it, I think he's a hell of a coach. He's one of the best coaches I've ever had. You know, and there's just, he's just one of those guys, he's one of those characters in the game. You can't wait to see what he says after the press. And, he always keeps it interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point about Torch. His training camps, Richie, they were insane. Like the first, you know, whatever, 3 or 4 or 5 days, they were so hard. But then the thing I loved about him is, you know, once you got through those 3 or 4 or 5 days, then he tapered it off so much, and then you got into the rhythm, and he gave you so many days off, and you just knew where you stood with him. Like, you didn't, like, everything he said to you, did you like it? Absolutely not. But he was always honest with me, and he liked guys that played hard, and I think that's why he liked you so much, because he knew you went out there every night and competed. And yeah, he was a character. I'm glad he's doing well in Columbus still.
Yeah, I mean, he probably is going to win Coach of the Year, I would think, this year, because, I mean, you look at that team and the guys they lost, and all of a sudden they're, you know, going to be a playoff team. It's crazy. But, you know, his antics are insane. You know, he sets a 5 o'clock meeting. You got to be in there, you know, 4:50. He starts the meeting without anyone in there, basically, and you won't let you come in if you know, he started talking. So there's just always stuff. I never left the room because I was scared that I'd miss the meeting and all that stuff. He keeps you on your toes. But, yeah, I love that, you know, no matter what, even if you didn't agree with him, he'd tell you what he thought was the truth, and at least you knew where you stood. And there's other coaches that don't do that, and you got to at least respect the guy for that. So,
I heard he lived in Point Roberts when he was there, and would like go home to walk the dogs after morning skate.
Yeah, he had he lived in the U.S. side. He had to cross the border every day to come to the rink. So I wasn't sure what he was doing there, but yeah, he lived on the American side. So literally, he was crossing borders every day to get to the rink, and you know, I guess he knew he was going to get in a scrap halfway through the year and get kicked out of the country, basically. So that was great. Yeah, I'll be there for that one.
Did he lose his mind on that one? He's yelling at me. He's like, Obi, you tell that fucker I'm coming for him. I'm like, Torts, I hate Hartley just as much as you, maybe more. He's like, how do you play for this guy? I'm like, I don't want to play for him, Torts. I've been trying to get traded for 2 months. And sure enough, Richie.
Torts, you got room for a stay-at-home D? Torts, I need
you to stay at home. Torts, I'll be the HD man. Just let me ride in the bird with the boys and hang out in Vancouver. And then, Richie, he came through that fucking door in Vancouver. And I'm telling you, Rich, if Big Earn didn't grab him, I had front row seats for Tortorella Hartley, like pay-per-view right in front of me, and I would not have got in there. And Torts is a short guy, but I'm telling you, he was fired up,
he's
and
strong.
It would have been on. But, yeah, man, I'm saying Mick Gratton saved Hartley.
Well, that would have been unbelievable to see. I think the whole league would have applauded that one.
For sure. Well,
Brad, how did you see that happen? Where's the coach's room versus the locker room? Did you know what was going on?
That start of the game, we knew what was going to happen. He came in and apologized to the one poor kid. His first NHL game, the kid has to fight and never plays again. Another shift in the NHL. He got 3 seconds of ice time. He scraps. He gets beat up by Kevin Westgarth. Like, come on. So
yeah, it was a Bush League move on our part, Richie, for sure.
It was kind of, when Torts came in, he apologized. Everyone's like, I'm not going to start the Sedins. I got to start, certain guys. But we the first period ended. Everyone was fired up. And we went in. I went in to, grab a snack or something in our lounge. And he had to see CBC feed on, and all of a sudden he's Torts is flying down the thing there, and he comes popping out, and we're like, what the hell? And BS could try to pop his head out and see what was going on, but it's probably a good thing it didn't happen. But
it's for sure a good thing. And I just kept saying to Torts is there. They got him leaned over our glove dryer. Torts is leaned over our glove dryer, and I'm like, Torts, calm down. Like, he's like, fuck you, Obi. I'm like, Torts, there's a Hockey Night in Canada camera right there that's getting all this. And like, then Sully was chirping, and then I just felt bad for Torts because Hartley knew what he was doing. He knew that if he started those guys, that Torts has too much of a pride and ego to start anyone else. And you guys were – the thing that rubbed me the wrong way, Rich, and we've talked about this, is you guys were in the midst of a playoff race. You guys were playing pretty decent hockey. We were done, and we come in there, and that hadn't been our way all year. We never tried to bully anyone around. McGrath would do his thing, but that was it. And then all of a sudden, Hartley wants to be a hero. It was just a Bush League move, and Torts ended up coming out looking like the worst guy, which was not right.
Yeah, no, it was. And I think we were first in our division when that happened. And we ended up missing the playoffs because Torts, I think he got suspended for 10 games or something. So, it's a big chunk of games when you only got whatever 30 or 40 left. So it was kind of a turning point of our season in a bad way.
For sure. So, hey, Rich, let's move on to now where, you're obviously with Phoenix and you've been there now for, is this your fourth or fifth year with the team?
Five years, yeah.
And obviously we've talked and keep in touch and, just talk about building a culture there and, where you've come from your first year there to where you guys are now and how it's come along and you've been a big part of it. And just talk about Rick Tocchet as well. I had him for a bit in Tampa. Just, he seems like an old school guy, and I know you get along with him really well.
Yeah, it's been a big change since I've been here. We've went through, some years where you didn't know if the team was getting moved. And when, I signed here, but we've changed owners a couple times. I think it's been three. It was a group when I got here, the first, but 8 guys, and I went down to 1, and now it's 2 guys. And so it's been 3 ownership changes in 5 years since I've been here. We've came a long way. I think we've made some huge strides where this new owner is spending a lot of money trying to get high quality players and people in here. Our GM does a heck of a job trying to find ways to get guys and then bringing in a guy like Talk, and some of our assistant coaches have been huge. Talk's an old school guy, like you said, Obes, and, he's kind of, in a way, reminds me of like guys like Torts and Daryl. He just wants you to, play the right way. And, he's trying to establish the culture here too. The guy came from winning 2 cups in Pittsburgh, and he's won it well as a player. And he knows what it takes to win. So he's a guy that you definitely want to follow. And for a guy, someone like me, I just try to show the, I'm an older guy now. I just try to show the young guys every day. You got to come in with, you have the most fun you can, but come in and you work your ass off every day. And there's a certain way you got to get it done. Everyone likes having fun and fucking around, but you got to put your work boots on when it's time to work and you got to do the right thing. So we have a lot of talent on our team, and it's just, I think we're evolving and hopefully we can start up and have a chance to try to get in the playoffs, because it's been a while since, I think it's 2012 last time the Coyotes got in. So that'd be really nice.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that real quick, just in that we've had some guests on this podcast, and they've all been good guests. They're all working hard, but none of them are going to make the playoffs. I mean, we've had Getzlaff on since the pause. We've had Shea Weber on, Ben Hudden. We had Joffrey Lupul on, who's definitely not going to make the playoffs right now. But
he'll make a 4-foot putt right now, though.
He will. And nothing will stop you all from playing golf. But how ready to rock are you all if the season gets back up and going? I mean, you mentioned the surgery you had. I mean, the Coyotes, you're in the thick of the hunt right now. I mean, if it gets back up and going, it's going to be an absolute sprint for you all.
Yeah, I think we're all trying to figure out what's happening. When you hear from your agents, you hear from the NHLPA and the NHL, so stuff. We don't really know what's going on. I think that we know we want to play, and we know they want to play really bad. So all we're hearing is, probably we'll try to get something together in July if everything clears up. But it's so much uncertainty and so many different questions that have to go with that, and testing, and how we're going to keep guys safe, and what kind of format it would be, if we play regular season or not, or just jump into playoffs. There's so many questions, and I don't think anyone knows the answer yet. But I don't know, as we want to have a chance to play. We're kind of hoping it's that 24 team extended playoff, and where everyone gets, you know, the guys on the bubble get a chance to play. Cause I mean, no matter what happens, even if we play regular season games, the schedule is going to change from what it was supposed to be. We'll probably be in different cities within our home city. So it's going to be a different schedule. So I think we have to be creative and adapt to the times and figure out a way to make a very competitive, maybe some kind of different format than we're used to for now. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen in the next bit. I don't think anyone does. So we'll just kind of, you know, train. And I know guys are working hard, but the one thing is it's going to take a while for guys to get back, because I don't think too many guys are skating and are able to skate. So guys are going to need that time to get ready, so there's not a lot of injuries and the hockey's a good quality.
Well, on this podcast, we were advocating a 31-team winner-take-all, one game each playoff. So don't think that's going to happen.
You want the old March Madness?
We're looking for a little March Madness, eh?
Yeah. I'd be fine with that, the old one and done, or you win seven games and you got the mug. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
That'd be nice, eh? That'd be nice for everyone.
But that's what we've liked. So I'm happy that you're on board with that plan, because we've gotten a lot of shit from, well, mostly people in Canada about that. So, but anyway, we really, really appreciate you taking the time to come on this podcast, Brad. Thank you so much. Any friend of Obi's is a friend of mine, so I appreciate all this.
The big boy.
Yeah, Richie, I really appreciate you coming on, buddy. Get those groins going. Ice them down. Get them going.
Buddy.
Get some pool time. And listen, I love you. It was great seeing you last week, and hopefully you guys can get out there and play, because I know you believe in your squad.
It was great seeing you. It was a tough way to end the golf game. I watched this guy play 18 holes against Lupo in a match. He comes down to 18. He hits a great drive and then poops one in the water. And then he topped her. Poops it in again. Match over. He turned into Roy McAvoy pretty quick there. Another nugget. Richie, another nugget.
Tin cup.
I think I went past the perfect buzz there on hole 17. And then when I got to that tee box in 18, I was feeling good. And then, I don't know, I think one too many cocktails might have got me. But I appreciate you coming on, buddy. Stay healthy, and hopefully we see you out there snapping around real soon.
Obes, I can listen to the Torts versus Hartley story any day of the week. And the fact that you two were on opposite teams, or the teams playing each other during that, just that made my day. So I loved hearing the opposite angles of that.
Yeah, no, it was just weird. I mean, you heard what me and Richie said about it, and you know, I've talked to you, Coop, and you know I'm not a big Bob Hartley fan, and just the way we did it was starting all our tough guys when they were in the midst of a playoff run. It was, you know, I'm all for old school hockey. I'm all for, you know, I used to fight myself, and I love that style of game, but at the right time, and I just didn't feel like it was right. And you know, and Torts' defense, did he act the right way? Maybe not, but he shouldn't have been, you know, he ended up being the villain when really it wasn't his fault. He just kind of overreacted. And you heard Richie talk about Torts. He's a fiery guy. He sticks up for his teammates, and he thought that was bullshit, and he didn't care what the consequence was going to be, but it ended up costing Vancouver a chance at the playoffs that year.
And you didn't know he lived in Point Roberts?
I had no idea. That's hilarious, that Torts. He doesn't like Canada that much, I guess, huh? The American wanted to stay on the stateside. I never knew that. That's hilarious.
It's either A, that, or B, he didn't want to pay Canadian taxes. He wanted to pay American taxes.
Yeah,
so,
which that could have been it, too.
I completely understand that. So, well, that was fun, and thank you so much for listening, everyone. Appreciate it. Brad Richardson, thank you so much for coming on. We have some wonderful stories for you on The Athletic right now. Eric Stevens and I wrote about how we were unbelievably wrong about our Ducks predictions. I think we had them between 90 and 94 points this year. Boy, were we off on that. Lisa Dillman has some really good take on some Kings prospects that can do well if the season restarts and they're able to practice with the big club. Also, lots of just really awesome podcasts this week. Florence Schelling of SC Bern is Craig Custance's guest on the Full 60. Ryan Reeves joins Barrett Jackman and Jeremy Rutherford on We Went Blues. And Brad Hunt is Michael Russo's guest on Straight From the Source. We are a 5-star podcast. Are we not, Obes?
100%, buddy. 5 stars.
Rate us 5 stars. Kind of drop in a nice comment or two, because we think we deserve them. And so make sure to do that. Also, subscribe to us on Apple. Go to theathletic.com/pointbreakaway. You'll get 40% off your subscription. There is also a 90-day free trial we're running on The Athletic, so do that as well because we think our content is incredible. And we've also introduced a comment section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app. So make sure to go there and leave a comment for Point Breakaway. We had one really good one for the Ben Hudden episode last week because Kings are hot right now. So anyway, that does it for our show this week. Thank you again, Brad Richardson. Thank you, Obi. Keep carrying that bag, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Thanks, guys. Stay safe, everyone.